Welcome to the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Liam confesses on BMB, Summer and Kyle's party goes awry on Y&R, Kristen is captured on Days, and GH's tribute to Sean Donnelly airs. All this and impending Daytime Emmy nominations, so stay tuned! Jillian Bowe, welcome.
Hello.
Mike Jubinville, welcome.
Hello.
Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello, precious.
Hello, precious.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. I'm not sure how to take that, but we'll just keep on moving. There was some really interesting stuff on screen, but on Friday we also learned that off screen, we're going to be getting the Daytime Emmy nominations on Tuesday, the first wave of them. This is always an exciting season. Due to COVID, it's been a little bit delayed compared to previous years, but I'm looking forward to it. Are you, Jillian?
I'm excited because I want to know who got what so we can finally dive in. It's like they're going to announce it 1 month from the telecast. That's just mind-blowing, in my opinion. But, you know, we'll see.
1 month from the telecast, and we're not going through, apparently, pre-nominations. So, it's,
yeah.
I mean, we're saving a little bit of time on that. And I guess we won't have two extra-long podcasts about the Emmys. Let's talk a little bit about what took place on soaps this last week. I'll start with The Young and the Restless because that's what I went to bed texting Josh about. We were discussing everything that's been transpiring and how some of these stories could just be so much better with a few tweaks. Josh, you had a suggestion regarding the Abby, Mariah, Devon pregnancy storyline.
Yeah, it's my suggestion is one that would have had to have taken place already, but I actually thought they should have had Mariah be the match to Faith for the kidney and then have to choose whether to save Faith's life or abort Abby's baby.
Ooh, that.
And I think that's
ooh, what, Josh, that's what,
I love,
right.
What I love about
that's
that suggestion.
Right.
What I love about that suggestion, Josh, is the fact that there's stakes. One of the things that is happening at The Young and the Restless is there are very few actual stakes. The corporate intrigue that used to be the foundation of The Young and the Restless no longer exists, and now it's just all really complicated business names that you have to have repeat over and over to the point where Victor was like, I can't even pronounce this name. I'm going to change it to Newman Communications. There are no stakes, at least for me as a viewer, to be invested in The Young and the Restless. Whereas if they had done what you suggested, those would be major stakes and tons of emotional repercussions in the aftermath of it. Mike, what did you think of Kyle and Summer's botched engagement party and the arrival of his son back in town?
I'm going to start off by saying that I actually liked more of The Young and the Restless than not liking more. I thought that it was kind of soapy to have a party gone bad. The fact that Tara decided to crash the party with this child and not reveal who he was to everybody there kind of took the air out of it a little bit. I just kind of liked how Phyllis swooped in and took care of Summer and dug deep and got into her, you know, what was really troubling her and getting the truth out of her, and then standing up to Ashland. So I actually thought it wasn't
really
too bad.
She really told him when she was like, there is no rooms at my hotel. I'm like, ooh, Phyllis, girl, you told him, girl.
Well, I meant about getting the information and then kicking him out again when he tried to get Tara and the baby. And so I just think like him accusing her of kidnapping is a big step, but or it's a dangerous step, but he's used to doing stuff like that and getting what he wants. So I think Kyle is in for a world of hurt. And I think Summer is going to also be like some collateral damage through this whole thing. I don't hate it. I just can't see it. Like, I can't see him and her and Kyle having a hot affair years ago. But there doesn't seem to be any chemistry between the two.
No,
and
there
and
isn't.
So that's, yeah.
And the mother has no presence. Like, I keep watching this, and I texted Josh at the end of the conversation, and I was like, are they just going to kill off the mother and then have it be Kyle fighting for custody against Ashlyn, because at this point the mother is so bland and boring and everything is basically Kyle and Ashlyn. Why not just like get rid of the extra paycheck to an actor and have the story be about the two people who it's really about?
I kind of look at her as being somebody who's been emotionally and maybe verbally abused. So I feel like she's kind of under a rock type character because she just is timid and
let me ask
afraid
you this.
Of her own shadow because of the abuse that she's taken.
Is there anything allegedly. About is there anything about that character that makes you engage, that you want to know more past this
well,
story?
No, because the whole exactly. thing just came That's out of nowhere point. Anyway. I mean, the whole story happened 3 or 4 years ago when we weren't even seeing it. So in that respect, no, it doesn't. But this is what we got. And I like the confrontation between Sally and Summer. And I actually like Summer, her conflict with this. I think, like, for the first time, I actually have a positive feel for Summer rather than one that's indifferent.
My thing is that I wish that this was the opportunity that The Young and the Restless was capitalizing on to make Summer more like her mother in the days when Phyllis was a badass. And Phyllis has not been a badass for a long time.
Right, not have Phyllis be the one to fight Summer's battles, but also have Summer take the lead and say, Mom, I got this.
Jillian, what did you think of the Ashlyn versus Kyle?
Well, damn, you just clipped the shit out of Mike. Ashlyn versus who? Phyllis?
Kyle.
I mean, well, Ashlyn versus Kyle, I think Kyle needs to put on his big boy panties right now, so to speak, because he's been ducking and dodging and lying like you this is the bed you laid in, so to speak, and you have to deal with the consequences. You know, when Jack was his age, Jack was dipping and doing child and dealing with the fallout. Like, you want to be the head of Jabot and be a big boy now? You did big boy things, so you got to get big boy responsibilities. I just thought, you know, I just think Sally just doing all this, manipulating all this over a job. I'm like, really, girl? I just want some. Like, I was so glad that Slumma slapped the shit out of her. I really was. And we need to see more of the Newmans, kind of like we see Phyllis doing it, but we need to see the Newmans close ranks on Sally, like, so to speak, like when Sally tries to come over to Newman Enterprises for something, Victoria needs to freeze her out. She tries to be civil to Nikki. Nikki just gets hoity with her. She tries to talk to Victor. Victor, let her know, look, bitch, I know what you did to my grandbaby, and I'm going to keep remembering that. Don't you forget. Like, Sally needs to get the repercussions of it. The Tara thing, I mean, it's soapy drama for her to show up at the party with the baby. I mean, you know, I just wish everybody would have put two and two together and say, Kyle, what is going on here? And that's when you found out the drama. I just feel as though they're trying to set up this new rivalry of Ashlyn, like the Abbotts versus someone new, instead of the Abbotts versus the Newmans. Although with Ashlyn and Victoria sniffing around, it just seems like it's going to be the Newmans versus the Abbotts with a new twist to it, with Ashlyn, I guess, taking the Newman side because he's sniffing around Victoria. So we'll see.
Josh, I'm going to segue to you on this by just saying, the one thing that I normally like Nick being a protective dad, but this week I just found him to be annoying when it came to Summer. I don't know why that suddenly changed for me. And so this is now a left sharp turn to Chelsea. What did you think of Chelsea this past week?
You say it best. Missy Claire Egan plays crazy like nobody. She's good. And
she is by far the best of her generation.
I thought that when she's doing the internal monologue and she's like, it's all her fault, it's Sharon. I thought, if they write this correctly, this could launch greatness. If they write it correctly, I like Chelsea being under the gun, and I like her being in a corner, and I want to see her come out claws out and going absolutely crazy. I think that they've got the potential. Young and the Restless has a lot of potential that doesn't often come to fruition, but they've got the potential here to do something really good. I like it.
Do you
much.
Think she could be the next Sheila Carter?
I don't know. I'd take it that far.
Well, I'm just saying we know her talent. So like if they lay the groundwork, could she be?
She could, but this sort of goes back to last week where you were talking about archetypes. One of the reasons that those villains, those Sheila Carter, Stefano Damera type villains worked was because they were only on screen every so often. And if they're going to keep Chelsea on screen on the daily and the weekly, you can't make her, you can't make her a Sheila Carter because it won't work because you got to make her blend into the canvas a little bit, even if she's crazy. But if they were to have her wreak havoc and then go away and then come back and go away, then I think they could make her a real viable long-term villain.
Okay.
Gives me Annie Lavery vibes, whatever. Waka waka.
Jillian, what did you think of The Bold and the Beautiful this last week? Vinny's death continues to have repercussions. Liam has confessed to Hope. What did you think?
I am just over this whole Thomas and Saint Vinny. Yes, it was bad.
Oh, yes.
It was bad that they ran him over on Old Decatur Road. Woo. But him in this soliloquy in Bill's office, I'm like, you are ranting and raving to Bill Spencer about this not being right. Vinny tore up his son's and his daughter-in-law's life. He tore up your sister's life, but he was a good person. Bill, like, I was cheering and, you know, chanting with Bill. I was like, I don't give a fuck about Vinny. I don't care about Vinny. The only person that I'm like, the only person who cares about Vinny is you, child. And at the moment, I wish it was you instead of Vinny in the morgue. Like, nobody cares. Okay, Thomas, that was your friend. But you trying to, I just thought the juxtaposition and the whole scene was just bad. Like, I thought it was good to see Bill and Thomas go one-on-one and for Bill to, like, lay into Thomas for the shit that he did. I enjoyed that because when you have Liam do it, Liam comes off jealous and whiny. I wanted somebody who can let Thomas know, who has that energy to let Thomas know, look here, I don't give a damn about your drug dealing friend. You want me to cry about that bastard after he did this to your sister and to say to Thomas, who are you to judge when you did all of this? Now, granted, it is funny that you see Bill doing it, but Bill has never tried to act as though he was somebody that he wasn't. That's Thomas. Thomas has all the excuses in the world why he blew up Rick's car, why he tried to force Hope into sleeping with him to get custody of Douglas, why he, you know, did all these things.
Killed Emma.
Yeah, you know, that was one thing that annoyed me. Now, that's one thing that did annoy me. Like, when Bill was listing his sins, I wanted him to say, and what you did to Emma. But under this regime, I mean, it's the only regime, quite frankly. But under Brad Bell, under the writers have said, under the show, they've said, Brad has said in interviews, Thomas didn't kill Emma. And I'm like, look here, I know you're trying to gaslight. I'm like, but we saw what we saw. Like, they need to play that beat. And if you're going to retcon it, you need to retcon it to say, I don't know, that somehow Emma swerved when Thomas went to hit her and blah, blah, blah. But you still have the whole he didn't help her thing. Like, it was just obnoxious to see Thomas railing. And I liked when Bill just stomped on his head like he was stomping at the Savoy when he was like, I don't care about Vinny. I don't care about you. And when I like that they kept that thread way that Wyatt is just like, you need to leave before you get your ass whooped because why are you here? Like, enough. Nobody cares about Vinny's death. Like, I'm still, this is the conundrum with this show. 1 minute, this show, like with the Carter and Quinn thing, it fire. Can turn on a dime. It's fire. And then, boom, we get back to the stagnant mess about Thomas and Vinny. Like, nobody cares about this Thomas and Vinny thing. Nobody cares. And that they have Thomas going around acting like he is, you know, Dirty Harry looking for justice. It's a joke. Like, I don't stop. Like, they said this murder mystery was supposed to be juicy. It's a snooze fest. It's very, very boring. I'm over it right now. I'm over it. And Liam, you can't tell Liam none of your damn secrets because he cracks like a fucking egg. He just cracked and told Mae West.
He wouldn't be a good spy, would he?
No. He cracked and told Mae West, I mean Hope, because I'm like, God. The get-ups that they have her in, I'm like, are you running a saloon? Are you in charge of the girls? Are you in charge of the girls at the brothel? I'm like, ma'am, Miss Ma'am. Like,
that puts outfits, whole new meaning in Forrester Creations.
Child, I'm like, these outfits are atrocious, and they know that it is because Annika Noel, she did an interview with TV Insider, and they mentioned the outfits. And you can read between the lines there. They know the outfits are a little, she didn't say
Dowdy.
Anything. She didn't say, not all the outfits are dowdy. She didn't say anything about anything derogatory, but all she said was, they are something, you know, they are getting people talking. And I'm like, oh my God, is this another scheme of yours? You know, when they were on the soup, y'all did those crazy things to get y'all on the soup. You got the mannequins kissing dummies. I'm like, are you purposely doing this? Like, stop. If that's your game plan, this is horrible. Like,
there are beats. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mike, what did you think of The Bold and the Beautiful this week?
Ups and downs, actually. Vinny has been mentioned more in death and is more of a presence in death than he was ever in life. I know that him and Thomas had I wouldn't even call them best friends as friendship. I mean, they seemed like they were estranged friends who kind of got back together again. Angry Bill this week made my day. Bill is the only one speaking his own truth
and speaking for the audience.
Yes, he knows that he's a badass and he's done bad things, but he doesn't try to whitewash it and act like he didn't do anything. Yeah. Bill is your typical rich white guy who thinks that any little scum needs to be dead regardless, and has no, you know, it makes perfect sense that Bill would consider latch onto the drug dealing personality of Vinny and thinks that life isn't worth being alive. It makes perfect sense that Bill would act out against Thomas, who thankfully is one of the few people that remembers that he messed around with Beth and screwed over his sister and his son. So Bill's son and Steffi.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I meant it. So yeah, I enjoyed that. It caught me by surprise, his venom, because it's rare that this show actually gets into really angry scenes with people. So I did like that. I could have done without 3 days of Brooke and Ridge and Brooke and Bill and everybody talking about Hope and Liam having sex.
Oh, my God.
I was so grossed out that it was so inappropriate for adults
Logan,
to be talking about their children's sex
about?
Lives.
Logan, what are you thinking about? I know. Hope about to get it from Liam, girl. Ooh, I'm like, what the fuck? That's what they did.
It was so cringy. And then it went on for days. And
yes.
I tweeted, I needed a shower after all that.
I just wanted Hope. I just wanted her to be like, get it, Hope. I was like, what is this? I am not here for this. I'm not. And
Josh?
Thomas busting in on them after that. I'm like, you don't know how to knock? Ugh.
Josh, what did you think of B&B?
I agree with everything that's been said both so far, but I do think that there are beats, much like on Young and the Restless, there are tweaks that could be made to storylines that could make them a lot better. So I know nobody cares about, I understand that Vinny and Emma are kind of the same and that nobody really cares about either one of them, but I think that what was missing from that conversation, as Bill was going absolutely batshit on Thomas, it shouldn't have been Wyatt that walked in. It should have been Justin. And yes! Justin should have gone after him about Emma having left her on Old Decatur Road to die, like he just talked about Vinny. And then Bill should have had to hold Justin back. And
no,
the other
Bill and Justin should have tried to jump his ass and then jumped in and tried to save him. They should have been intimidating Thomas, like letting him know, you know, Bill should have been like, so you going to set it like, well, you know, Bill ain't going to say it, but he should have said something like, so you're going to start Justin or am I? And Justin be like, I'm going to do this or let's do it both. And they go to beat his ass and Wyatt comes in.
Yeah.
I'm like, I understand they're trying to I didn't mean to cut into your time. I'm sorry, okay. But I feel as though the show is trying to redeem Thomas. That's why he's not still trying to like lust after Hope. You can still do that, but on his redeem quest, he needs to answer for what he did to Emma. I know people don't give a damn about Emma. I don't give a damn about Emma either. It's the fact that beat is missing and it's driving me.
But the thing is why does Thomas need to be redeemed? Like, it goes back to next week or to last week. I mean, Bold and the Beautiful has very few archetypes on its canvas. Thomas could have been one if they would have just embraced his villain and then give us the smallest of moments of humanity to make it.
And we see that Thomas is hustling everybody and he's still the scheming mother.
Right. They've got it. They're soaps are just, they don't have the archetypes and Days of Our Lives is probably the best at it. But the other three, they just really struggle with their archetypes. Josh, finish up what you were going to talk about on The Bold and the Beautiful, and then we'll go to Days.
Okay, yeah. The other thing is, the other beat in this that would make it better is nobody is asking why Vinny was walking in the middle of what I assume is Mulholland Drive in the middle of the night. And
that is
so,
what Bill said to him. Why are you walking in the middle of the road in the dark?
Right. And so I think there's two ways you could go with this. First of all, you could pull Justin into this and they could have had some sort of fight. But more interesting it would be if it was actually Thomas that got into a fight with his friend over what he did, punched him around, did whatever, and then Vinny being drunk and or punch drunk, wandering around the middle of the road and gets hit. And that's why Thomas is so filled with vitriol or something.
Yeah,
or Thomas and him were fighting and Thomas gives him clocks him good. And because of the impact, like how hard Thomas clocks him, he gets thrown in the road. And at that moment, you get what I'm saying? Boom.
Yeah.
Him hits him. So it's kind of a combination of both. I want to see something like that because, you know, they're all he was my best friend. I'm like, we didn't know about that most vote. Being your best friend until he got ran over because, I'm sorry, again, beats need to be played. Steffi, wait. Steffi, when she talked about when we first got introduced to Vinny, Steffi acted like he was some scumbag. She was like, you're still hanging out with that guy? She didn't act like that was somebody growing up that she grew up with. She didn't say, oh, Vinny, him, oh my God. Remember when none of that. Like, all of a sudden, that's Thomas's best friend. Shut up. I don't care.
Well, it's soaps do this a lot. I mean, General Hospital did this when they introduced the trans character that became Liz's best friend. We get these characters out of the blue that are they supposedly were close friends on, which when we were all watching on General Hospital, and it was literally Emily, Lucky, Nicholas, and Liz. They make these things up to fill in holes. Sometimes they're executed well. General Hospital did a decent job, but this Vinny thing just feels shoddy. Completely shoddy.
They promised a murder mystery, and it turns out that this is really just a hit and run of Vinny. And so having Vinny be the one that got killed was the cop out right from the start.
It's a big bust. It's a dud, honey. It's a dud.
Something that is not a dud was Jillian's reporting back in March when she first reported that, and forgive me if I mispronounce this, Dan Furiagal? It will be portraying EJ DeMira.
Dan F. That's what we're going to call you, baby, because we don't want to screw up.
How about this? Dan F. Fury. We can just abbreviate it down into Dan Fury because he's going to come on the scene like a fury. I don't know.
Fine as hell. Typically call him Dan Fine too.
Well, that's true. He was very good. He was very good looking in Spartacus. I watched Spartacus. I remember him.
Oh my God, I love that show. Yeah.
But Deadline confirmed your report this last week. You reported first in March. Deadline confirmed it. On screen, Sammy and Lucas have. Boy, if you were a Lumi fan back in the day, you are getting every single Lumi vibe you could possibly get between the capers and the sex and the, like, after, like, regret. You're getting all the Lumi highlights, but it's all leading up to EJ's return. So, Jillian, tackle the casting.
Well, you know, sorry, Agatha. I was right all along, girl. Sorry, sis. Yeah, you know, I had heard about this a while, and I was sitting on it. I was just sitting, and then I finally said, screw it. And, you know, they finally got him to speak because this, see, kudos to Days for doing this. I mean, I know some people be like, girl, you telling our secrets, but at the end of the day, that's what y'all do, so sorry. Days and these other shows have this, their stars just can't help themselves, that they follow each other, so... As soon as you, you know, like, say, for example, James Scott was following, Michelle Stafford or something. Then you see him follow Joshua Morrow. Then you see him follow Christian LeBlanc. You start to pick up, oh, he's going over there. Mm-hmm. This guy played it straight. Nobody from Days followed him. He didn't follow none of them, one of them on there, and kept quiet. That's how you play it. So this was really good. He's, like we said, we've seen him in Spartacus, so it's going to be, he's a good actor. I cannot wait to see what happens because I just feel as though EJ is going to flip his shit and Samantha Jean, like, I feel as though Samantha Jean is going to have some explaining to do for falling into bed with Lucas, and EJ has never liked Lucas, so the two of them, they better duck and pray. That's how I feel.
Is it wrong that this whole time when her and Lucas are having sex, I'm in my mind, I'm like, EJ's been in a wheelchair for how long? Because I don't remember. Did he actually get out of the wheelchair? Or
we don't know.
He's still been in rehab. Because in my mind, I'm like, this woman hasn't had any dick for how many years? Okay, You can't really criticize her too much.
They don't have an open. No. He's been in and out of, like, he's, you know, whenever Sammy, that's the threadway, and they finally pulled the trigger with it. It, you know, when Sammy would come, it was some family thing, and then she would have to leave because EJ, when you would hear, or if why didn't EJ come, he got a setback. So they finally had to pull the trigger to cast him. No. To answer your question about the sleeping with, to be fair, Sammy and EJ have never had an open relationship. Sammy, at her core, has always been, let's just be real, to her core, when she is with a man, she is loyal to a fault. She is too loyal. So, Sammy will... Like, I was about to get there, except, well, see, it's Rafe. So, it's Rafe. So, girl,
no one cares about Rafe.
It don't count. We don't know her. Sammy has always been loyal because of what happened in her childhood. Mm-hmm. So, the fact that Sammy cheated on Rafe, and then she cheated on EJ, who is her soulmate, who has accepted her for who she is after she tore up his world and Abigail's world when they cheated. The chickens are coming home to roost for Sammy. So
see, that's what I was wondering about, because it just seems a little bit... I don't read spoilers, so this is just my own speculation and conjecture. Seems a little bit too easy that Sammy has slept with Lucas just in time for EJ to return. Meanwhile, Abby and Chad's relationship are on the rocks. We know Allison Sweeney is back for an extended period as opposed to it being her pop-in visits. I'm wondering if this is going to open the door for EJ's return to be a chem test with Abby as well. That, like, I was watching and I was like, oh, I'll bet you this is opening the door for an Abby chem test.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know anything. I don't think that's going to happen. Obviously, I feel as though they're going to chem test him with everyone, because if he's a hit, then you have the conundrum of, is he going to stick around? How do you explain Allie's coming and going? So I don't really have an issue with that. But like I said, I feel as though, based on Sammy's history, for her to do this again, to cheat, and she was just so disgusted by her cheating, because Sammy, that's just nothing. That's just something Sammy does not do. You know, this is going to be very interesting to play out. And the fact that EJ had to pay for Lucas to get out.
Right.
Of that debt. Woo. Oh, yeah. Sammy about to
well,
get
that
in.
Corrects history, though. I do think that this is a bookend, so to speak, for when EJ and Sammy were in a car and Sammy was begging EJ to help her save Lucas. And he said, I'll do it if you have sex with me. And so this is a little tit for tat with that. I mean, it's an interesting bookend for that storyline.
I hadn't thought of it that way. I'm not sure that I agree, but if that is what the writers are trying to pull off, then we should potentially brace ourselves for some more controversy. Chrishell Stouse will be returning to Salem this week. We will get to see her. Her character Jordan will be interacting with Ben.
He don't go on crazy again, I guess.
Right. Well, there was a little bit of craziness in the fact that him and Claire. I never can remember her name. Him and Claire kissed, which I know was something that Josh, you and Mike have probably been like fangirling over since it happened.
Oh, what?
No, the only thing that I was really liked about it was that he took his shirt off before he decided to stop. But other than that, no, you know, that it's sort of like a predictable course, right? You knew that those two were going to end up consoling each other in some form or another, because, you know, now he's got the divorce papers and he knows that Sierra maybe potentially is having some sort of physical relationship with Theo. So, you know, at this point, Claire and him have turned to each other over Sierra before. So them actually kissing is not a huge surprise, but it's kind of builds the tension by, you know, breaking it up and holding it off.
I like that it's ambiguous with Theo, because everybody, I see your hoods and your colors over there. Mm-hmm. I see people are just so, oh my God, Theo, da 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 da. You don't know what Theo's doing. We don't know what Theo and Sierra are doing. I'm glad that it's stirring up some controversy. Yes, are they or aren't they? But it's also showing your hood, so to speak, out there. So we don't know what Theo is doing with Sierra. So, you know,
maybe Sierra doesn't even know that Theo sent. Maybe Theo sent papers without her knowledge. You know what I mean? So you don't know what's going on. But
again, we don't know if they're sleeping together.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
right.
So,
no, I get it. I understand.
The only thing I don't like about it is Claire needs a man who likes her. She was second place with Tripp. She was with Charlie, but then Charlie turned out to be a rapist. And then Ben is obviously for Sierra. Claire needs somebody.
See, and I actually think that, like, even though earlier I said that Days is doing pretty well at archetypes, I actually think Claire is an example of an archetype that needs to, they need to like bring her a little bit closer to the brink again. She's becoming a little bit too good girly for me.
I don't mind her.
I did want to bring up something with you on the podcast about Days, because you've said it, I think it was in your end podcast, about Kate being the baddest bitch. Now, for me, Sammy will always be the baddest bitch, and Vivian will be right there.
No, I didn't. I said Kate was one of the smartest, so get that right.
Smartest, baddest.
Nope.
All I'm going to say is I had to give you credit, because this last week, as I was watching Days of Our Lives and everything that Kate went through and survived, and now she's like being in an induced coma after having survived Kristen, I was like, damn it, Jillian was right. This woman is just invincible. What did you think of Kate's storyline this last week?
I mean, I really didn't care about the storyline. I mean, it shows that Kate got more lives than a cat. I know that.
I did appreciate Gabby commenting on it.
Yeah, you know, okay, Kate's fine, whoop-de-woo. I thought it was good. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, shakes out, because Jake and Gabby are back together, but you found out why Kate dumped him. No, the thing that interests me most was Gabby and Julie gossiping like some
hens. Oh, yeah, that was good.
When they were like, are we on the same side? And they're like, about Glenn.
That was good.
I was like, I liked that when they were just like, not here for Gwen's shenanigans. I actually
and Gabby liked, forcing Julie to admit that she was wrong, yeah, and then being like,
you know, Julie, did you hear that? Julie's listing her sins, and Gabby is like, well, you finally admitted that you were wrong. No, but I enjoyed. Listen, this was the part that made me cackle. I loved when Chanel came over to Allie and gave her this hug. Trip was shooketh.
Oh, it was so good.
Yes, that was what I was. I was like, you are intimidated by that brown sugar, baby.
She shot him that look over Allie's shoulder.
Yes, like, bitch, I could take your woman if I want to, but I love it. I love it. That is what I enjoyed. I love
that's
that.
That's a viable triangle. Oh, that's a viable. Yes. They all have chemistry with each other.
The vibe. There, it's all about the vibes. I love it. That is what had me. And Trip looks shooketh. I'm like, Chanel is like, you know, listen to some salt and pep. I could take your woman, bitch. Like, I love
it. Trip and Chanel together was good after Allie left the room. There was chemistry there too.
Yes,
there's chemistry everywhere.
This girl is a great find. It's a great find. It's very great find. Jack Hay has taken her under her wing. I'm like, Jack Hay staying for a while. Oh, this is gonna be good.
Do you see her on Twitter this week? Say, Auntie Paulina coming back this week, in a few weeks, kids. Y'all just hold tight.
Yes, because she is, because that girl, she is, Jack A will get, Jack A gets them coins. You saw she was on Pose. She's on some show on Netflix. She's everywhere. Jack A is everywhere. And she was on something with Lifetime the other day, too.
Let's talk about Kristen, because this week, Kristen.
No, I don't.
Kristen, she rampaged her way. She manipulated Xander into attempting to kill Sammy and Lucas.
She paid him.
When the week ended, she was basically like, you're not going to put me in jail or else Chloe will die. Mike, what did you think of how it all played out? And what did you think of Lonnie being the one to bring her in?
Well, I thought it was probably a come around full circle thing.
Yes.
That Lonnie actually was the one to look at Kristen and say, you know, girl, no, it's over. You can't keep doing this shit.
Yes.
So, yeah, I was good with that. But, yeah, Kristen, it had to end, didn't it? Because we're, you know, this Kristen thing and the mask is and her kidnapping people and strong arming everybody and. Yeah, it had to stop. So I'm glad that it was Lonnie. That's actually people. I'm glad that Lonnie was the one to do it.
Yeah, because Lonnie was the one who set her loose,
right?
And caused havoc. So Lonnie, it was
just all Lonnie's fault.
Yeah, and I mean, it was I didn't say that. So
I know. I'm just
don't
kidding.
Do that. Mm-mm, don't you do that. I just like that Lonnie was just like, when she was all trying to be like Susan, she was like, girl, I know that's you up under that bad wig. Like, I know it's you, girl. And they had their moments. And I like the fact that Kristen didn't harm Lonnie. She finally realized, I gotta sing, you know, I gotta face the judge. I gotta, you know, face the music.
And connecting these storylines, the conversation between Chanel and Lonnie about Lonnie and Kristen and how people thought they were together. And then you have Kristen and Lonnie on that park bench and Lonnie so sweetly sort of rubs Kristen's chin and sort of knocks something off of it. It was just like, this is an umbrella storyline.
Well, not only that, but it also, I mean, what does it say that Kristen will turn herself in for Lonnie, but she won't do that for Brady?
Brady's an asshole.
Well, no, but what I'm just saying is the way they're developing this, and then also with Chanel's conversation with Eli and her planting that seed about Lonnie and Kristen I mean, the way that it's being played
Chanel
out, they're actually developing it where the connection, whether real or imagined, between Lonnie and Kristen is actually stronger than that between the women and their respective romantic interests. Absolutely. And it's a very nice touch because it's not something that we normally see on soaps, but they've underlined it with this, could they or could they not have done something when they were in Europe in the, and so
land that plane, baby, because I have something to piggyback on.
It's really, they're doing it really well.
Really well.
Well, and also, let's be real, Chanel ain't shit. Like, let's just be real. Chanel Chanel is a little troublemaker just trying to, you know, needle people, because Chanel also is still salty. I think Chanel is also doing that because she's still salty that her mammy gave money to some churn she don't know like that, but she won't give her any money. So let's just be real. I love you, Luke. That you I'm like, Luke has put some thought into this child, because, you know, I'm like, I never really thought of that, but I'm like, Chanel only doing that. I'm just like keeping it real. Chanel doing that to fuck with Lonnie. Like, come on now. Like, Chanel is like, I'm grateful for my cousin, but I'm still mad that my mother gave her brat's money that should be going to me and me tearing up this podo town. So that's probably why she's doing it also. But carry on.
The women's friendships is just nice to see.
Yes. Because,
like you said, Luke, on the other shows, we're like, why does this person not have somebody to talk to? Why does this person not have somebody to talk to? It's just nice in a genre that was originally a women's genre, that you're seeing women who are friends with women and they have talk tos. It's just nice.
There used to be a lot of that on General Hospital, but it's almost all gone now.
I agree.
Like, it's almost entirely vanished. And General Hospital used to actually be the best at it of the four remaining. I mean, back in the day, All My Children was the best because you had the Kane women and the couple other aspects. But of the current four soaps, General Hospital was the best for a very long time. And that element of General Hospital is just completely vanished because you have people talking to each other like Nina and Ava, who should never talk to each other. And then you have long histories of like Carly and Alexis being trapped in the elevator and not liking each other, but having these random moments where they'll come together and have these conversations. Carly and Alexis are never have those conversations. Meanwhile, Ava and Nina are having it like they're the best friends after Nina went and fucking ripped that baby out of her body. I mean, it just drives me nuts. But Carly, let's talk about
Olivia. Carly and Olivia were a brilliant friendship when they were running the Metro Court together. I mean, I know they're still running it together, but they don't show it. I love
Carly. I mean, they still have those little aspects, but they're still there. I feel as though they are rebuilding and revamping it, because Brooklyn and Maxie,
that's gonna last all 5 seconds when Brooklyn
I don't think so, because who, Maxie don't have her good Judy Lulu anymore, and who does Brooklyn have to confide in? I feel as though this is going to the Maxie shenanigans and Brooklyn shenanigans. I feel as though that's gonna bond them and they're going to be close. So I don't have a problem with that, but you know, you do kind of need some more women talking. I mean, you see Ava confides in Laura and they talk and so on. You had Diane and Carly talking, you know, sitting and talking. I thought Diane had me screaming, though, when Carly was like, Cyrus is into, what's her name? The brunette, the interchangeable brunette of Sasha. Diane was like, Sasha not fierce. Yeah, Sasha not fierce.
I think
and
for
she
me,
she was like, ew. I was like, bitch, stop it.
I think the thing for me is, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to articulate this well, because it's sort of two sides of the same coin. What I love so much about Lonnie and Kristen's conversation was it was about their emotional connection and talking about their children. It wasn't about, for the most part, men. And the thing about General Hospital is Ava's conversations with Laura tend to all be about Nicholas. The conversations that Carly have tend to all be about Jason or previously Sonny. So many of the conversations that are taking place between the women on General Hospital are dominated by the male topics in their lives. Whereas the conversation that took place with Lonnie and Kristen was a more intimate about their connection, about their children, about the loss of the child. there was something different about it, which is what we don't see on General Hospital in the same way.
But you said they don't have these conversations. They do. They're just not. They just happen to be focused on something else. They GH has them.
Okay, let
they're
me
just not nuanced. No, no.
Let
no,
me
no,
put child, it this way then. What took place on Days of Our Lives this last week was about character development, evolution, and growth. The conversations that take place on Days are on General Hospital between the women are about plot points. It's not about what we saw took place on Days of Our Lives. Now, that having been said, General Hospital had probably the single best episode of soap television I have watched in 5 years. Girl, I am not.
This will be fun. This is going to be fun. Girl.
I am not familiar with Sean Donnelly. I will just state this up front. He predates my beginning to watch General Hospital. But when I, as I was watching that episode, how they incorporated all of the legacy characters who I love so much, how they paid a tribute to both his history as well as the characters that I am familiar with Anna, Roger, Laura.
Who's Roger?
I always do that. Damn it. I don't know why I do that.
Scorpio. Child. Roger Scorpio.
Child, that man,
I always do that.
Make a cameo and tell you about your ass. I'm like,
Roger Howarth said what?
What I loved was the fact that we had Anna and Robert and Laura. We had, like, even though I'm not familiar with Tiffany, I love how they did the phone call. And I love the fact that they incorporated the actor's real life daughter into the story as becoming a WSB agent. Mike, what were your thoughts on it?
I was kind of intrigued by the fact that all these people that were connected to Sean, and we didn't really get to see the memorial service, but what we got was people mysteriously disappearing. And I said at some point to Bud, I said, this reminds me of like an Agatha Christie movie because like, where's Miss Marple? It's reminiscent of, 10 Little Indians and then there were none. That's what it reminded me of. So, and then Josh did tell me that somebody on Twitter said the same thing, but I thought that was,
it reminded me of the people disappearing on Days of Our Lives to go to that
you
island.
You said 9 minutes, girl. Go.
So very quickly, the fact that the ruse and the mystery was built up to be just a test for, Annie was a huge, it took me right out of the entire episode.
Oh, God.
Personally.
Oh,
I just was like very disappointed that
Mike
somebody
is a
wasn't
cold,
up to
soulless
something.
Person.
Mike is a bitch. Let's go.
He has an iceberg for a heart of empathy.
I will say, though, yes, the connections between the people that we have not seen together in a very long time was very, very good. I loved that aspect of it. I could have done without the mystery part, but I liked the flashbacks. I liked, you know, and then when Robert and Sean were fighting in that gondola, Josh yelled out, "I remember watching that." I was like, yeah, I know, right? But so it was just kind of fun to relive some of that. And then, of course, Tiffany and Sean's wedding, that was always funny to me. And then Sean and Monica, yeah. She traveled overseas for that kiss, baby. But anyway, I thought it was good. I liked Laura and Monica sharing a scene. I liked Tiff. I liked that they got. I liked that they got Sharon Wyatt to actually make a call in and talk to some longtime friends of hers. And I have to give a shout out to Caitlin Riley. I thought she did such a great job. She blended in so well. I would have never known that she had never, ever done anything like a soap before. So I thought she did a great job. And I thought it was really cool that they let her play the daughter.
Josh, as I was watching it, I had to text Reagan and I was like, have you watched this yet? Because I think the Irish castle was once the Greek island villa where Laura and Stavros and Nicholas have been from time to time. What did you think of the tribute episode?
I thought it was great. I love when vets are all together, and I love the flashbacks. Just to echo Michael and Jillian, Sean Donnelly and Monica Quartermain had a hot little affair.
Yes!
and didn't none of those Quartermains like it, but she did it. That was the hotness. I loved the flashbacks. I love the flashbacks of the wedding where her, I can't remember, Jillian, help me. What's Tiffany's real name that was revealed at the wedding?
Elsie Mae Crumholtz.
Oh my God. That's the funniest thing I have seen in a very long time. And I remember watching that. And I remember that look on Sharon Wyatt's face while he's going. It's just wonderful. I thought it was great. I thought, and I'm sorry, what is her name? Annie, the one that played Annie Shaw, her real life daughter.
Caitlin Riley.
I'm sorry. I thought Caitlin Riley.
Only Caitlin that we represent around here.
That's amen, sister. Mm. Caitlin Riley was great. I wish we could keep her. I thought she was really, really good. I also didn't love the ending with her initiation thing, the only reason I didn't like it is because I thought they could have really launched a story.
See, what I was thinking when I was watching it is, boy, her as a WSB agent and Dante as a cop could be very interesting. It could almost be like Robert and Anna 2.0. Speaking of Anna, though, Jillian, Felicia ripped Anna a new one. And I was there for the scenes. It was so great to see the emotion and the power between those two characters. Yeah. I actually thought that Felicia ended up letting Anna get off a little easy, just because I felt like that was the one element where she forgave too easily because of Sean's passing. What did you think of the tribute episode? What did you think of Anna being confronted by Felicia?
Okay, so this ain't gonna be in your time frame, darling, because that was too much. You gave me a two-parter. To do that, I feel like I'm back in school and I gotta go break out a damn dictionary and a calculator too. Felicia ripping Anna, that was justified. I felt as though she didn't let her off the hook. Anna just kept it a buck with her. She thought that Peter was somebody that he wasn't, and he gaslit her. I felt as though Felicia, I was telling this to somebody else because they were saying they didn't like that. Also, I said, to be fair, I said, Frisco is Robin. I think Frisco is Robin's godfather and vice. And, Anna is Maxie's. And the fact that people miss this point, the fact that Anna, who knows Faison in and out because he has been obsessed with her since she was three, because she vetted his son. That's why Felicia took her word for it. But you find out that he wasn't who he was because Rob, the only person who was like in that family, I should say, who was like, nope, he ain't shit, is Robert. That, yep. He kept hearkening on that. But because Anna, who Faison she's known so well for most of her life, damn near her whole life, that's why she took her word for it. So it was something that needed to be said. But Felicia got that. Anna saw what she wanted to see, and she apologized. I had no problem with that. It was good. What else did you ask about?
The tribute episode in general.
The tribute episode was cute. Thought it was a cute thing because if you know Sean's background, Sean was a mofo back in the day. He was actually, he and Robert were adversaries, but they became cool. And because of, and it, I thought it was, I'm like, maybe it wasn't that way, but I took it this way. At first I thought Peter had something to do with it. I'm like, oh God, Breathless Mahoney over here. Maxie, what are you doing? I'm like, one whispering mobs of the Breathless. I'm like, Jesus. I thought, oh God, he has something to do with it. And I thought, because I'm like, okay, that's kind of tying in history because Sean and his pappy, Faison, teamed up when Anna was a double agent. They found out that Robert and Anna were seeing each other and they were going to quit being in the spy game. They wanted to settle down and have a family. We know why Faison outed her, because he wanted Anna to himself. Sean busted her, like outed her, because he was like, that's two of my best agents. Like, no. So I thought that was kind of, I thought maybe, is that what they're trying to tie this back into? But I don't know. I guess maybe Peter was just a spoiler, just a little red herring, I guess. But I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was cute having all of his, Sean, the closest people around Sean. I thought that was really cute. You had Sharon Wyatt there. I had, you said some people, why wasn't she there? If you Google Sharon Wyatt, you will see why she is not there. So I thought that was really cool that they were still able to incorporate her, because you had so many people bitching and complaining about her not being there, but they were able to incorporate her. The actress that plays Tiffany, Sharon Wyatt, she has this bone ailment that has messed with her jaw. So because of this ailment, it has taken her out of acting. Because of it, it's made her go into retirement. So, you know, I thought it was brilliant how they did that. I was like really cool with that twang, that southern twang, and Sean finding out about her real name. I thought that was hilarious, because that's pretty much how Tiffany came into Sean's life, is because Monica and Sean had a steamy love affair, honey, and she could not stand it. And Alan and Edward teamed up to try to pretend like he was going, like that Sean and Monica killed Alan. They were going to frame them, but it didn't pan out. So they got Tiffany to go around Sean, and the rest is history. So I hope they bring, you know, Anna Jr. back, because that's who Annie is, Anna Jr., but she's Annie now. I hope they bring her on. Maybe, you know, fingers crossed, the young lady, she's never acted before, so kudos to her. She hit the ground running.
I'm going to go around the circle and get your guys' final thoughts real quick, or final thought real quick. Mine is that as much as I enjoyed the episode, I thought that the Peter and Maxie scenes really hurt the momentum. I actually think that it would have been stronger if you would have juxtaposed all these classic spy capers and flashbacks with Jason and Britt being on the run, and if Dante had been chasing them. So there could have been a scene in which Dr. O calls up Britt
and it
to
wouldn't
warn
have
her.
Been a special episode.
Well, no, but like we had four different scenes with, or five different scenes with Maxie and Peter. Those scenes, if you had been able to juxtapose it with Dante being the cop, the new Robert, and chasing after, and basically having the same sort of like villain cop adventure storyline going on with those three opposite of what's happening here, I felt like it would have been sort of an ode to this is our new generation. No. But that's just me. Mike, final thought?
I thought over this past month for May sweeps, the soaps are kind of looking a little bit better and upward. There are some pitfalls and holes, but overall, I think last week I enjoyed most everything on the shows than I have in a while. So keep it up.
Jillian, final thought?
My final thought was, the Peter thing, you flew your plane around and talked about how you didn't like that. I didn't mind it because also, like I said, they can't bring Fags on back. That was kind of like a threadway, in my opinion, based on Sean's history. You know, this man is circling around Sean's goddaughter, and you know, Bobby and Tiffany and Sean had their history too because of Lucas. But I enjoyed seeing Bobby, because Bobby had to remind y'all hoes that she was the supreme bitch, the queen bitch back in Port Charles. She was the OG schema, and she let Peter know, I'm a nurse and you can go. And she dismissed him and was like, you can leave or you can be escorted out. And she didn't blink to help Maxie when Maxie was like, I need you to deuce. And she was like, say less. I love that. You know, we know Carly and her never grew up together because Bobby gave her up because of Ruby. Because Ruby was like, girl, I'm in charge of the girls over here. But you see that you see where Carly gets it from. Like, Bobby was the OG schemer. And I love that she is like getting into action. And you have that connection there with her and Maxie. They don't really play it off it. So I loved it. So, yeah.
That was good. I agree.
Yeah.
Josh?
My final thought is there was some humor on Young and the Restless this week that I really enjoyed. And that was Victor and Adam sitting around cackling about pulling one over on Victoria about what they were going to name their new company. I thought that was funny. They giggled about it. There's very rarely humor on The Young and the Restless, and it made me laugh out loud.
It's just annoying that Victor is like trying to browbeat those boys into being tight, and he's doing this to Victoria. And I just want to see some stakes with that, because let's be real, Victoria and Nick are tight like glue. So for him to be cool with Adam, I need some stakes there. I need for Victoria to be pissed, and for her to be like, "Oh, bitch, you out of the circle. Like, yeah, my protection against you is over. Like, I'm gonna come for your ass too."
On that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DC Confidential. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DC Confidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Josh is at Dr. Joshua09. Jillian is at Jillian Bo, and Mike is at MPJ24. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
So long.
Hi, y'all.
Throw some beads at Luke on Twitter.